Hello everybody, my name is Oliver Schlotterer. I'm a PhD student at the MPI in Munich. My supervisors are Stefan Schneeberger, who is in the audience, and Dieter Lust. I wish to thank the organizers and coordinators for giving me the opportunity to speak to you. In the next hour, I will tell you about explicit BCJ enumerators. What is it about? I'd like to remind you of the talk which Svi gave last week. It's about an organization scheme for tree-level amplitudes in gauge theories. In the spirit of color ordering, color decomposition, you can organize any field theory amplitude in terms of diagrams made of cubic vertices only. So you organize them by their pole structure. And the idea which Svi presented last week is the following. Whenever you look at certain diagrams made of cubic vertices, which have a certain crossing symmetry, then there are certain dualities between the color factors which come along and the kinematic factors which come along. What do I mean by this? Let's introduce the Mandelstam variables. Here we have a propagator in the U variable. And over this propagator, there is some color factor, structure constants of the gauge group, if you wish, and some numerator factor. I'll do the same for the S channel, and the same for the T channel. Now, on the color level, there are Jacobi identities, which hold in any case due to the group theoretic structure. On the color level, Cu plus Cs plus Ct, well, it's a combination of the structure constants like this, and it's no surprise that this has to vanish. And now, the highly non-trivial statement by BCJ is, if you have this identity on the color side, then there exists a dual identity on the kinematic side. If I take the corresponding numerators here, nu plus ns plus nt, I might also get zero. What does it mean? I might get zero. Well, you have to make a clever choice how to organize your contact terms. If you go back to the Lagrangian of QCDs, for instance, then there is a four gluon vertex, and this certainly has one propagator less. So there is some freedom where you package your four vertices into the cubic diagrams. So only if you make a clever choice, then you also get the dual identity for the numerators as a reward for this clever choice. What was it good for? Let me recapitulate the motivation which Svi gave last week. These numerators, of course, occur in any loop order. And if you find the analogous equations at higher loop, then you can make a connection between planar n equal 4 super Young Mills and the obviously more difficult non-planar sector. Working a bit more on this technology, we might find a mapping for all the non-planar diagrams to reduce them to the planar theory. And you have heard from Nima that the planar theory is under very good control, at least on the level of the integrand. Yeah, so this is the first motivation for looking at these BCJ numerators and bringing them into this form. As a second motivation, once you've arrived at the non-planar theory by means of the Jacobi identities, as a next step, you can get gravity for free. If you're using the KLT relations, which Emil presented, on the level of these BCJ numerators, then you find that these gravity tree amplitudes are nice sums of squares, no cross terms in the numerators. But the crucial prerequisite to get this beautiful form here is to make the kinematic enumerators satisfy these Jacobi identities. So enforcing this brings us great simplification, firstly for non-planar super-Young Mills, and secondly for gravity. And in the next hour, I will give you an explicit construction prescription how to obtain numerators which satisfy this clever choice. This method is inspired by string theory, and in particular, it's using the pure spinner approach to superstring theory. This is a somehow alternative way to package the worldsheet degrees of freedom. It's different from the standard Ramon-Neve-Schwarz and the Green-Schwarz approaches which you find in textbooks. Yeah, what I'll present is based on, well, it's the outcome of a series of projects and papers, which I did with Carlos Mafra, who is also sitting in the audience. My supervisor, Stefan Stieberger, and partly Dimitrios Tsimpis. He was in Munich, now he's in Lyon. And the papers I'm referring to . This guy discusses six-point amplitudes. And in the second paper, we propose a field theory formula at endpoint using the pure spinner formalism and those building blocks which later on enter my VCJ enumerators. And right now, we have some work in progress. Hopefully, it gets finished during the workshop before we leave in the beginning of May. Here we are. As I said, the construction of the field theory numerators gets inspired by string theory, in particular the pure spinner approach to superstring theory. And one of its main advantages is that you can get manifest spacetime supersymmetry and quantize covariantly at the same time. This is a luxury which you don't get in Ramon-Neve-Schwarz and Green-Schwarz. And since we have this manifest supersymmetry, the language I'm using is about superfields. And I'm using the superfield formulation of n equal 1 super-Young Mills in 10 dimensions. But I hope you don't lose interest if you, if you want to have gluon amplitudes. The first thing, we can still extract the component expressions. I'll write down super amplitudes, but whoever is interested in having gluons only, it's completely straightforward to go down to components again. Components. And Carlos has provided a computer program, which is presented in this reference here. This program trivializes the job of bringing the superfields back to the level of gluons and gluinos. OK, the next thing I have to say, if you're not interested in 10 dimensions, you can still dimensionally reduce. All the results which I'll be talking about, they are valid in any numbers of dimensions. It's straightforward to dimensionally reduce down to d equal 4. Then, for instance, the 10d gluon will become a 4d gluon together with the 6 scalars of the n equal 4 super-Young Mills multiplet in 4 dimensions. So it's absolutely straightforward to dimensionally reduce the answer. And finally, the superfields which I'll present and which I'll use, they have all helicities incorporated. So you can get any non-MHV amplitude you wish. Our computation does not make any reference to this. And you don't get any simplification, whether it's MHV or n to the 10 MHV. OK, this is what I wanted to say in advance for before jumping into the method. Yeah, the tool which I'll use to derive nice VCJ enumerators is string theory. In particular, it's the interplay between string theory and field theory, which Emil nicely presented in his talk. The message was, if you take the alpha prime to zero limit of string theory, if you shrink the strings to point particles of zero size, then you get field theory. And on the open string side, you get super Yandels. First of all, in 10 dimensions, but you can still go down back to 4 dimensions. Okay, and for scattering states of string theory, you use a worldsheet description. Let's say we want to scatter 4 open string states. Then the associated worldsheet you can draw looks like this. And here on these ends, the open string states are inserted. And it should be thought of as infinity on the worldsheet. So we are talking about S matrix elements. Okay, and this open string worldsheet, if you take the alpha prime to zero limit, reduces to a color-ordered field theory amplitude. There's a clear color ordering of the string theory vertices, and if you reduce it to field theory, then what you get is firstly the S channel, and secondly the U channel of the four-point, let's say, gluon amplitude. There's a third channel here with the T variable, but this one is absent in the canonical color ordering which I'm considering here. And to make the computation for the string amplitude more tractable, we are using the power of conformal symmetry. The worldsheet field theory taking place on this two-dimensional Riemann surface enjoys conformal symmetry. This is very rich in two dimensions. So by means of this conformal symmetry, I can map this surface here, this worldsheet, to the punctured disk. By punctured, I mean that there are some defects. And if I send the these legs to infinity, then these defects shrink to zero size. In other words, these are just points. The scattering state is sitting at a point of the unit disk boundary. Punctured disk. Yeah. And for practical purposes, integrating over a unit circle is not so nice, so we prefer to have these states on the real axis. Using a further conformal transformation, we go to a complex coordinate patch. Using a complex variable z, here's the real part. Here's the imaginary part. There's the real part. Sorry. And I can use the conformal symmetry to force 3 of those points to positions I like. And the positions which I particularly like is z1 equals 0. Maybe I use some color. It's nicer for you to see. One state is sitting here. Then the next state will be mapped to z3 equal 1. And the third freedom to fix something I use to send number 4 to infinity. And here I think of infinity as a point on the compactified real axis. So this infinity is the same point as that infinity. OK, now the power of conformal symmetry is over. I fixed 3 vertex operator positions. So the last one here, number 2, is still free to move. And everything which preserves the color ordering is possible. So in this case, since position 2 can move between 1 and 3, I have to perform an integral over set 2 between the boundaries set by position 1 and position 3. More concretely, if I wish to compute a tree-level amplitude in superstring theory, I have to specify a color ordering. And the superstring amplitude will, of course, depend on alpha prime. So far, I haven't done any field theory limit. And the answer for this is a CFT correlation function, a correlator on the quantum field theory on the worldsheet. And first of all, 3 of the conformal fields are position fixed. number 1 is sitting at z1 equals 0. Number n minus 1 is sitting at zn minus 1 equal 1. And a third guy is sitting at infinity. And if I'm scattering more than 4 states, then there won't be just one integral, but instead there will be many, many integrals from j equal 2 up to n minus 2. Many integrals over the positions of the additional states. And the integration region for this n minus 3-fold integral must be such that the ordering is preserved. So z1 equals 0, smaller than z2, smaller than z3, many other inequalities like that. And zn minus 2 is the last variable I integrate over, and this one has to be smaller than 1. So this is the integration region for the canonical color ordering. And I haven't introduced you to these objects v and u. These are the so-called vertex operators. These are the conformal fields which generate a state of string theory on the world sheet. And the essential property which you should know about them is they are in one-to-one correspondence of physical states. Suppose you are interested in a gluon with helicity plus, then there's a unique vertex operator which creates such a gluon. And as a technical side remark, there are two versions of these vertex operators, whether they are position fixed or whether they are integrated over. And I've told you that our computations were done in the pure spinor formalism. Using the pure spinor formalism, then these vertex operators will contain superfields in the n equal 1 super Young nodes in 10D. This d equal 10 superspace theory contains two gauge fields. Firstly, a vector field, as you know it from Maxwell. And there's additionally a spinorial superfield, Majorana Weyl spinor in 10 dimensions, corresponding to the Grassmann-Ott coordinates theta of superspace. Okay, here we are taking a CFT correlator of superfields. And once you have evaluated the position dependence, in the end, you need a prescription how to get back to components. How do I extract the gluon from this superspace expression? Sorry. And the prescription is, at the end of the day, this correlator bracket selects the theta to the fifth component. You only take those superfield combinations which add up to a fifth power of theta. And by making this selection, you get the representation of the amplitude in terms of gluon polarizations and gluino wave functions. Why the hell is it the fifth power? Well, the reasons for this are a bit technical. It has something to do with the BRST cohomology of the pure spinor formalism. As in any approach to superstring theory, there's a BRST charge, which selects the physical states as their cohomology. And since you have a certain ghost number here, this ghost number dictates you there's just one unique element in the BRST cohomology, and this is occurring at the fifth power of theta, and not any other. A second reason is based on spacetime supersymmetry. You can also check that this prescription satisfies spacetime supersymmetry, which is far from trivial. No, they're dimensionless. No, I don't know about any argument like this. Okay, this was a lot of information on the string side. Let me now come towards field theory. The poles, well, which give rise to those cubic diagrams above, they have different origins in field theory and in string theory. In field theory, the poles come from adding up Feynman diagrams, and by introducing the Feynman propagators whenever the Feynman rules tell you to do so. In string theory, the source of the poles lies in the integrals. So these integrals over world sheet positions generate poles. Let's do a naive counting. We have to perform n minus 3 integrations. And as a consequence, we can get n minus 3 kinematic poles. And this fits your expectations, how many poles you expect in an endpoint field theory amplitude. Let's explore this in detail on the example of a four-point amplitude. I'll compute for you the four-point open string amplitude with full-fledged alpha prime dependence. It gives you a single integral over dc, just in the unit interval, as I've indicated over there. Okay, and the integrand is, you've seen it on Emil's talk already, the world sheet positions have an exponent given by the Mandelstam variables. This is due to the plane wave part of the correlator. To generate the space-time momentum, you have to insert a plane wave among the conformal fields, and the correlator of these plane waves evaluate like this. This is the overall prefactor of the integrand, but then there's a refined structure. At four-point level, you have two different terms. You can generate a pole in set 2, but also there exists terms with such a pole in 1 minus set 2. These are the two collision regions where the label 2 collides with either 1 or 3. And the superfields along with that, I just call them NS and NU. I specify them after the computation is finished. Okay, in this simple integral, you can recognize the Euler beta function, which can be equivalently expressed as a quotient of gamma functions. In this particular case, you get these gamma functions with Mandelstam's S, U, and T. This is a prefactor which multiplies. Now I have to make a difference. What is this integral doing compared to that one? The first integral is interesting in the region where set 2 equals set 1. As a consequence, you get a pole in the Mandelstam S variable. The other one does the same for the U channel. Okay, and here I've reproduced the field theory amplitude of 4-point. In other words, the stuff here is something like a form factor. This is the only part of the amplitude which knows about alpha prime. And if I send alpha prime to 0, if I make the field theory transition, then this becomes 1. Yeah, so the structure of the amplitude is, it's a stringy form factor. Times a sum over two diagrams. Here, this is the S-channel diagram, like this. And secondly, the U-channel diagram, like that. And now I should be slightly more explicit about the numerators. NS is a superfield where the first two vertex operators interact with each other. If I send U2 close to V1, then the operator algebra of the CFT gives you a composite superfield, T12, which carries the degrees of freedom of the first particle and the second particle. But for the moment, please think of this as a black box, a superfield black box. And the other two vertex operators are untouched. In the U-channel, correspondingly, there must be some interaction between label 2 and label 3. So the same composite superfield, T23, appears with a different set of labels. And again, the others are untouched. Okay, now what happens if I decide to go to a different color ordering? Suppose I want to know the amplitude with ordering 1, 3, 2, 4. Emil has told you that this is proportional to the original amplitude, but here I will look at it differently. I'll guide you in detail through the computation. it's a different integration region, which occurs then. As a consequence, the Mandelstam variables are mixed here. But up to here, nothing happens on the field theory side. So here, this correction is only taking place in the stringy form factor, and it goes to 1 in any case, regardless of whether I permute these Mandelstams or not. So here, nothing happened. But on this side, something will happen. If I change this integration region, then all of a sudden, there will be two objects appearing on top of a pole. It will be a T-channel pole, and the numerator you get along with it is just the linear combination, ns minus nu. And there will still be a U-channel pole with an opposite sign. Okay, so what happens is that the S-channel pole from the canonical ordering 1, 2, 3, 4 gets replaced by the T-channel pole, this one. Oh yeah, maybe this is different to the conventions of other people. Here. Sorry for not clarifying this. Good. But now, the important message, which I want to draw from this different color ordering. Here, we have derived the third numerator. That's a stringy derivation of the fact that nt is given by nu minus ns. So this is nothing but the promised Jacobi identity for the three different channels. Okay, I have to admit, at four-point level, this is not very exciting. The structure of four-point amplitudes is simple enough that those n's will satisfy the identity for any choice. At four-point level, I don't have to be clever to achieve that. But this will get non-trivial at higher points. So let me now go on with higher point amplitudes and higher point Jacobi identities. I think gauge symmetry is a consequence of being in the BRST cohomology. On superspace level, we are using this gauge, but I could not tell you whether it's which gauge it is on the gluon level. But in superspace, I would say this amounts to taking normal coordinates in the superspace curvature. All right, I've presented you the CFT correlator in a four-point amplitude. Now I will give you the corresponding CFT correlator in an n-point superstring amplitude, again depending on alpha prime. On dimensional grounds, there is alpha prime to the power n minus 3. Then there are all these integrals. Then there are the plane wave factors in the world shape positions. And yeah, to clarify notation, this Sij is the dot product of momentum Ki times Kj. Okay, now I come to the interesting part of this CFT correlator. I've introduced a composite superfield Tij last time, and there are natural generalizations of these composite superfields suggested by the BRST cohomology in pure spinner superspace. These are composite objects with any number of legs you wish, and they have extremely nice symmetry properties, which guarantee that you can identify them with Feynman diagrams. So for each of these composite superfields, I can write down for you a Feynman diagram corresponding to a P plus 1 point amplitude with one leg off shell. But I don't want to go into the technical details here. For the moment, I suggest we just think of these guys as black boxes, which carry the space-time kinematics and which combine into BCJ numerators. Okay, here these are my black boxes. And we precisely know the associated set polynomial. If you have the labels 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on, then you just build a chain of these labels in the associated z's in the denominator. Okay, this belongs to the first t, and the second t gives rise to okay, so all I want to say is the set dependence is under pretty good control. And along with that, there are all permutations 2, 3, 4, n minus 2. It must be like that because in the string computation, you have a total symmetry in all the labels 2, 3, 4, up to n minus 2. And as a consequence, the answer for the correlator must also have this total symmetry. But the point where the symmetry stops, this concerns the integration region. I want to compute color-ordered amplitudes. And if I choose a particular color ordering on the open string legs, then I have to adjust the integration region. So the only place of the correlator which knows about the integration region is in fact not the correlator itself, but instead it's the integration region. So for any color ordering you can think of, it's the same piece in this bracket here. And the important message for our purposes is, how many kinematics do you see? How many of these black boxes are around? Well, from the permutations, it's the number n minus 3 factorial. But there's also a sum which counts the partitioning. How many legs are sitting on the first t and how many on the second t. So you have to multiply by the number of terms in the p sum. And altogether, this gives you n minus 2 basic kinematics. And these are the same basic kinematics in any color ordering, independent on the ordering row. Let me try to make contact with the BCJ numerators. If you look at all the color orderings which are possible, then you get many, many different BCJ numerators. And altogether, in an endpoint amplitude, you have 2n minus 5 double factorial Poe channels. Or if you wish, BCJ numerators. For n equal 4, it reproduces the number 1, 2, 3. Seems to work. Okay, and from my explicit computation, I have n minus 2 factorial basis kinematics. This is all the set of linearly independent kinematics which I have to construct the BCJ numerators. Any BCJ numerator I can get from this amplitude is something like plus minus k1 minus plus k2 and so on. You just get simple linear combinations in a way to be specified below. And because of these dependencies, I can be sure there exist very nice relations, linear and homogeneous relations, which look like follows. They take a set of n's and some sums or differences of them must be zero. There must be enough equations to reduce that many n's down to fewer basis kinematics. And these are precisely the Jacobi identities. I think it's more than natural to expect that you can organize these equations such that you only take triplets, which vanish at the same time. It's just a matter of playing around with these equations. And in all examples we looked at, this goes as high as 6 points so far, but it's no problem to do higher. In all those examples considered, it really works. You can get all the Jacobi triplets vanish. I think this is best done diagrammatically, spotting the triplets. here I have not assumed anything what is sitting here. And you can place any further diagram, any further sub-diagram on those ends. Let me give an example for 5 point. You can decide to put a fork here with the labels 4 and 5, and the others are simple legs. So here, spotting the triplets means you just take any possible combination to put here on one of those exits. And I think at 5 point you have 5/2 possibilities to do so. So there are 10 triplets at 5 point. But if you take a closer look, then only 9 of them are linearly independent. But that's a technical detail. Yeah, and this generalizes quite naturally. If you want to know about 6-point triplets, feel free to put one leg here. No, sorry, wrong direction. For color ordering, it should be here. So like this. And similar games. And as I said, experimentally, our linear combinations here turn out to be nice enough such that all these triplets formed by diagrammatic considerations vanish. Oh, and one important property which I forgot to mention, these black boxes here, I should say they are local objects. So they won't contain any poles. Perfectly local, everything. Good. And once again, I got stuck on the string side. I should return once again to field theory. So how would you construct the numerators by performing an appropriate field theory limit? Let's look at it at 5-point level. At 5 points, we start with a superstring amplitude. Let's keep the color ordering open for the moment. This is a double integral over some appropriate region in accordance with the ordering. Once again, there are these plane wave factors. Now let me evaluate the very abstract sum over there. At 5 point, this abstract sum gives rise to 6 different black boxes. And since I'm getting tired to write out these black boxes, I give them a nice nickname. This is K3 with some specification. And the reason I specify them like this is there is some residual relabeling symmetry. Whenever there is 1, 2, 3, then there also comes a 1, 3, 2 because of the permutation symmetry. So this guy is the corresponding K1 with reversed labels here. Sorry, K3, just for the ease of notation. And there are 2 further terms. K2 plus K2 with reversed ordering, and some more stuff, K1, 2, 3. You see, I leave out some spaces. I want to play with a blackboard in a second. And I don't get any further integrands. In particular, I don't get any double pole. There exist some older papers on the superstring 5-point amplitude. And those papers might carry along a double pole like this. From the CFT point of view, it's totally understandable that such a double pole arises. In intermediate steps of the computation, this guy is certainly present. But our building blocks T are chosen in a specific way to absorb all the corrections due to the double pole. You can re-express the double pole integral in terms of the others, and by that, this numerator here, whatever it is, gives corrections to the other numerators. And absorbing this correction gives you those BRST building blocks which we are using. And the same pattern holds for any number of points. So in the six-point correlator and any higher correlator, there will be certainly no double pole of any kind. And this is the crucial thing which we need to get down to the n minus 2 factorial basis. Here, such a double pole integral would be a seventh member of basic kinematics, and this would screw up accounting. So it's absolutely essential that you absorb all the double poles. Yeah, and this formula I've given you above for the endpoint correlator, it has all the double poles removed. Okay, then let's take the field theory limit of this integral here. If I take the field theory limit, I get a super Jamils amplitude, which does not depend on alpha prime. On the right-hand side, I perform the alpha prime to zero limit. And let me just give you the result. The first integral has the following pole structure. It's a pole in S45. And along with that, it's an S12 pole and an S23 pole. What does it correspond to? Obviously, the first basic kinematics contributes to two different diagrams. The first diagram here is with labels 1-2 in a fork and 4-5 in a fork. But also the second diagram amounts to taking a fork of 2 and 3, 4 and 5, and leg number 1 is somehow standalone. Okay, these are the diagrams corresponding to the pole structure. Then the second integral will contribute with a minus sign to the diagram S23 and S45. And I'll do the same for all the others. Here, this is the diagram with S12, S34. This has no field theory limit. You can see this from the fact that there are no neighboring positions. Set 3 is not a neighbor of set 1. There's always the set 2 in between. So the integral does not have any chance to become sufficiently divergent, sufficiently singular. So no poles here. But here again, there is a pole in S51. And yeah, in fact, there are two different poles. It can come along with S23 and also S34. And finally, this guy has a pole in 23 and 51. If you do the counting, you get five different pole structures corresponding to the cyclic orbit of this diagram here. Everything is fine. What has happened on the technical level? Well, to evaluate the field theory limit of the integrals, we have a good technology available. Yeah, in fact, Stefan has an algorithm. Suppose you give an endpoint integral like this to Stefan, then by just running his algorithm, he can immediately tell you what is the pole structure. And he can do this for any ordering you wish. So since the pole generating machinery is available, I think it's fair to say that this is an efficient route to compute the BCJ numerators. Explicitly, let me identify some of the BCJ numerators. In the standard parametrization, N1 is sitting on top of that diagram. So how can I find N1? Just look for the S12 pole together with S45. I should use colors once again. So here. And this is the only contribution to that diagram. So obviously, N1 is K3, 2,3. And in our building blocks, it's this guy. OK. Let's go for another one, N2. Maybe it's time to switch on the beamer, because I'll switch soon. N2 in the standard parametrization comes from this pole structure. So it's sourced by two different terms. And more precisely, N2 is given like this. And the last thing I'll read off for you is N5. N5 is associated with these poles. So N5 is given by plus K1, 2, 3. And what I'll tell you in a minute, once the beamer is warmed up, using the material on my slides, I will show you that N11 is nothing but K1, 3, 2. And now, by staring at this triplet of numerators here, I can identify one of the five-point Jacobi identities. So what we have derived here using string theory is N2 minus N5 minus N11 equals 0. Okay, now I hope that the slides become readable. Let's wake him up. Hi there. Okay. Very good. Here we are. I've written down the field theory limit of the integrals for the canonical ordering, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But it only captures 5 out of the overall 15 pole channels. To get all the other pole channels, you should complete the Kleiss-Kujiff basis of subamplitudes. These Kleiss-Kujiff basis consists of all orderings, number 1 here, number n there, and among the others, you take any combination. This is a set of n-2 factorial color-ordered amplitudes. And if I compute all of them, then I've found every single pole channel. I can read off every single BCJ numerator from this set here. And as I said, Stefan has the pole generating machinery available. If you send all the color orderings to his machinery, then he will give you this result here. And suppose you want to know a particular n, and you just have to look for the associated pole structure. So let's go and find N11. The poles of N11 are in 2, 4 and 5, 1. And yeah, by scanning this list here, I find it at various places, and this is in perfect agreement to the standard parametrization of the Kleiss-Kujiff basis at 5 point. Here is the complete list of all the 15 BCJ numerators, and apart from the Jacobi identity we checked, there are 8 further independent ones. Okay, you can form 10 different triplets, but one of them is linearly dependent. And you can check that those 15 ends trivially satisfy all the Jacobis below. If there are some fans of the spinner helicity formalism around, you can go down to 4 dimensions. You can expand everything in components. And you can really choose a particular helicity configuration. So here I've prepared an example of the MHV5 gluon amplitude with the first 2 gluons in negative helicity. And we've computed just any set of possible basis numerators. There are 6 linearly independent n's, so any choice is equally valid, and we chose to compute these 6 ones. You see, every single BCJ numerator has a nice expression in terms of spinner helicity variables. And to get all the Kleiss-Kujiff amplitudes, you can compute the remaining 10 ends, the remaining 9 ends by means of the Jacobi identities. Okay, this is all what I wanted to say about 5-point. To convince you that we can do this even at higher point, let's look at 6-point integrals. If you're computing a 6-point amplitude in string theory, you get 24 different numerator factors. And in order to make contact with the field theory, just use the pole generating machinery and extract the pole structure. These are all the poles which occur in the color orderings shown here. There's no remainder on the next page. Here are comparable examples, more or less nice. Yeah, and from the poles from the previous transparencies, you can read off the numerators. I should say, at 6-point, there are 2 different topologies of diagrams which you can get. On the left-hand side, there's a particularly symmetric configuration. We call this these diagrams snowflakes. And the second topology you meet at 6-point in field theory is the right-hand side. We call them tower bridges. Maybe you know of a nicer way how to call them. And in the following list of numerators which I give you, the notation is such that you just take all of the poles in the square brackets. Okay, and on this first page, I've shown you 24 numerators which are particularly nice. Nice in the sense that it's just one basic kinematics. But of course, there are many, many more. They can involve two basic kinematics, for instance, but others involve four of them. And we have a few black sheep who are as ugly as this. And our conjecture is, in an n-point amplitude, you will get BCJ numerators with at most 2 to the n minus 2 case. We've been checking this up to 7 points so far, but maybe 8 point is in progress. Stefan, have you finished that so far? OK, it's no problem. Good. So this was the 6-point example which I wanted to make. Can we switch off the beamer? To give my concluding remarks, I return to the blackboard. If you compute the endpoint super young Mills amplitude by these string-inspired methods, say in the color ordering row, then what you get is a sum over basic kinematics. And the number of basic kinematics is as small as n minus 2 factorial. And the way in which they are reshuffled? Sorry? Oh, these are just the local expressions which enter the ends. This is something like this, something perfectly local. What? That's. Oh yeah, I haven't said everything. Oh, yeah. OK, and the precise linear combination in which the k's enter, well, we have decided to introduce a pole matrix here with one index to label the kinematics and another index to label the color ordering you wish to compute. And you can extract a formula for the p's from the string computation. This is the field theory limit of the, let me just say, the endpoint integral in the integration region I row. So the it's by now we have all the technology available to compute these matrix elements to very high order in n. And yeah, one example which we have encountered in the 5-point case. I've been computing for you the canonical color ordered super young Mills amplitude. And this is sourced by a pole matrix entry like this S12, S45, plus S23, S45. So this is precisely that guy. OK, and if you're curious to see this algorithm, this will appear in our work in progress. I ask you for some more days of patience. OK, let me summarize the two main novelties in our procedure. First of all, we have this algorithm to extract the field theory limits of the superstring integrals. And secondly, we have organized the CFT correlation function of the string computation in such a way that it just gives you n minus 2 factorial independent kinematics. The crucial step to do this was getting the double poles under control. And for this purpose, the pure spinner formalism has been an excellent tool. I don't know about any RNS computation which gets such a good management about the double poles. This is all what I wanted to say. Thank you very much for your attention.
One question. Do you want to comment on the spectral as far as getting a form that's manifestly symmetric, you know, other than just symmetrizing.
Ah, okay. I have to say this is the weak spot of our numerators. They are local, but they are not at all crossing symmetric. I've shown you on the transparency. Some of the n's have 8 different entries of basic kinematics, others have fewer. But there is no subtle interplay between the superfields which make it crossing symmetric. Yeah, I have to admit this cannot be achieved so far.
What's the reason for that? Or what's the obstruction to trying to find the crossing symmetric expression?
It's, as you say, it's an artifact of our choice that these three positions are sitting at 0, 1, and infinity. You're right. Of course, you can make a different choice at the beginning, but still, then there will be other, other numerators which have a very long expansion in terms of the basic kinematics. Well, I can show you the unintegrated vertex operator is the pure spinner ghost. The pure spinner formalism has a spinorial ghost variable on the world sheet. It's a Majorana wild spinner of SO10. This is contracted with the super Young-Mills superfield for the Grassmann-Ott coordinates. And for this guy, on the other hand, we know the theta expansion. Ooh, I hope I get it right now. I think this starts with gluon polarization dotted into gamma m times theta alpha, and then there's something theta squared times the gluon polarization plus dot, dot, dot. And we were thinking about offering a tutorial on the pure spinner formalism. Firstly, the pure spinner formalism as a whole, and secondly, in view of our black boxes, which I've been using all the time. So in case there's some interest on your side, I think Carlos and I would be very happy to explain a bit on that. Unfortunately, we both have no overlap with Nathan, but yeah.
Well, we won't tell Nathan he gave us a preview.
Okay.
Maybe all CNI is going to report that to me. Any more questions?
Your formula, the amplitude and the whole matrix, do you have a corresponding formula for the supergravity amplitude? Using the same whole matrix? So.
We haven't thought about KLTing this stuff so far. But presumably, it will still be the sum over all the poles, about all the numerators squared. I mean, all the input which you need to get this formula is the Jacobi relations. Yeah. Yeah, this will be our next step. Once the papers are finished for gauge theory, then we square them.
Thank you.